So we still have to have a class about the whole idea of spirits and demons, and the truth is that there are different terms in Hebrew, and for lack of better words, we call them spirits and demons, and that might be a misnomer, you know. So we have to define what these things are. So we have a ruach, we have a shade, we have a mazik, to name three. And what are those? So that's why I wanted to quote to you the Rashi, because there's a Rashi in Sanhedrin that delineates the difference between them. But I'm not finding it right now, so I still owe you that. But then again, you know, you popped the question on me. It's not like I had time to prepare a class here. Rashi in the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin delineates the difference between them. There's also a Medrash. The Medrash says that on Friday, Hashem created spirits, and before there was time to put them into a body, the sun set, so to speak. Obviously, God never runs out of time, but this is the way the Medrash describes it, a spooky Medrash. And they remained, these spirits. Ah, I see. Spirit drifted in. Okay. Now... okay. So, we have commandments in the Torah that tell us we're not allowed to raise someone from the dead. We're not allowed to communicate with the dead. And we have to know there's a big machlokas, Geonim, Rishonim, whether there's any validity in doing that. Nachmanides discusses, and this pertains to our parsha, that there were ancient wisdoms of knowing how to communicate with the dead, knowing how to forecast the future based on the birds. The Talmud says there was an ancient wisdom to knowing how to read palms of the hand. But all of this was lost, says Nachmanides. He says, in his day already, 700 years ago, he says, oh, everything you see are people who have a very, very poor tradition on how to do all of this. So they're not as good, then they're not going to be able to give you accurate information. But once upon a time, there are people who knew how to do this well. Maimonides and some of the Gonim are of the opinion that they're all a bunch of charlatans. And I've mentioned many times that in my youth I studied magic. And when I visited my parents' house, I got to see all the chests of magic tricks I used to have. And guys, believe me, there's a ton of stuff. I didn't even remember all the stuff I knew how to do. There's a lot you could do that seems really miraculous. You know, I can make your watch stop right now, but I don't do this stuff anymore. But it's not miracles. It's all a matter of tricks if you know how to do it. I don't want to give away other people's parnosa, so I'm not telling you how to do it. But if you know how to do it, so you could do a lot of things. You can make people's glasses levitate off their nose. So those are magic tricks that involve certain skills. Then there are magic tricks which involve knowing human psychology, which is what, according to some Rishonim, these charlatans were ventriloquists. These charlatans knew how to use different spices and drugs to cause people to hallucinate. And these charlatans also knew human psychology, knew how to say things to get you to hear what you wanted to hear. Unfortunately, today in this country, we have radio programs with people who are, I wonder if these people are doing avodah zarah by what they do. You know, people call and say, and they start telling them, I see in your future this or that. The other thing? Yes, sir.
But I thought that did you refer to something to do with the ruins of the Beit HaMikdash? You weren't allowed to go into the ruins or something because of it were demons?
Oh, wait, we'll get there. We haven't gotten to...
Sorry, right. Saul.
Right? So over there, in that parsha of King Saul, when he goes to bring back Samuel from the dead, over there specifically, the Radak brings down the Machlokas Geonim, whether everything that happened there was for real or everything that happened there was fake. You want to see the earliest sources on it? The Radak over there quotes the Geonic arguments about interpreting that parsha. Over there.
You get punished for doing that.
There's a biblical prohibition against doing that. The question is the biblical prohibition telling us don't do nonsense? It's in our parasha. The Torah says, Tamim tiyeim Hashem Elokecha. God says, you're not like the nations. I gave the nations, it says in our parasha, in Parasha Shoftim, I gave them all these different types of sorcerers. But you're not like that. I gave you a prophet. What is God saying there? Nachmanides is of the opinion that God was saying, I gave them true access to the future. I gave them true tools that they can use to know the future. But you, the Jewish people, were not given those tools. So don't use them. That's Nachmanides' understanding. Maimonides and some of the Gaonim are of the opinion that God was saying, they have their nonsense. What do you have it for? You have a real prophet. What are you going after their nonsense for? God says, I gave you the real, you have the real McCoy. You don't have to go after their foolishness. The question is, what's the Torah saying? The Torah is prohibiting Ov, Yidoni, and things like that. But what was the Torah telling us? Don't do something that really works, or don't do something that's nonsense. Even if it really works, what's clear in the Talmud is that it's not as accurate as prophecy. They can give you a general picture, but they can't give you an accurate picture, and that's how you can discern between a prophet and one who uses these forces. This was all introductory. Okay? Now, if we are to say that there are all these spirits and whatever, if we're going to understand that literally, so then there are different forms. There's a shade, and then Rashi says that they could talk to the shadim, but the shadim could harm a person. That's what Rashi says. So there's something called a shade, which is some kind of demon, and then there's something called a ruach, which we might translate as a spirit. Wait, I know what it says there. We'll get there. Slowly. The example that you gave specifically, we'll get to in 1 second. But there are sources. I think it's a Zohar. I heard it quoted. I never saw it inside. Rabbi Avram Shapiro Zatzal quoted it. And I heard Rav Mutzafi, he should live and be well, quoted in the Shir. But I don't remember what source they were quoting. That all the laws of demons don't apply in the land of Israel, because in the land of Israel, God doesn't let them have any rule. They can't do anything here. Here they can't harm anyone. So if they could literally harm someone out of here or not, I don't know. But here in the land of Israel, they're not given dominion. So you got nothing to worry about here. I wouldn't worry about them too much in Chutzlaretz either. When was the last time someone saw one? We don't see one. The issue is that they have a certain halachic weight as well. Meaning, we say in halacha that, let's say, I'm opening a can of worms here, but you guys have to be educated, right? So I'm going to open a can of worms and I'm not going to close it. So I'm leaving you with questions, okay? I hope you guys don't mind. The halacha says that, let's say, you're walking in the evening, late at night, and suddenly you hear someone say, hey, it's me, Chaim Yankel Finkelstein. I'm stuck here in the pit and there are snakes all over and I'm about to die. And you recognize his voice and he can't see him clearly. And he says, do me a favor, go give a divorce contract to my wife. No one's going to find me out here. You can't save me. The crusaders are coming. You're going to get killed. I'm going to get killed. Go give a divorce contract to my wife. She shouldn't be in Aguna. And you're on the run, you have to run. Imagine a situation like this, God forbid, in the Holocaust or during the Crusades. There's a circumstance where things are under pressure, and a guy calls out and says, do me a favor, you know it's me. And you can't see clearly that's him. The voice sounds right, but you can't see clearly that it's him. And he says, go, bring a divorce. I'm making you responsible to bring a divorce contract to my wife so that she doesn't remain an aguna. Now, an aguna is a very important thing. The halacha says, we wonder, was it a demon or not? So here in halacha, we start saying, maybe there are other things at play here. Okay? So that's where things start being problematic. So I went to Rav Avram Shapiro Zatzal. I went to his house. And I said to him, how come we're worried that it's a demon? When was the last time you met one? And if you never met one, then how come we're worried about it in halacha and we're going to leave this woman stuck as an aguna? Okay, this was my question to Avram Shapiro. This goes back about 5 to 10 years ago. So he said to me, what do you know? So, to my mind, we have to understand if Maimonides and others don't accept these things the way we take them at face value, then what was the Gemara saying? So we won't take it at face value. So then we have to know that whenever we encounter Gemaras like this that discuss spirits and demons and whatever it is, so we have to know that there are multiple understandings here. And the question is, does the Gemara mean to say literally the way you're imagining from whatever horror shows you saw, all kinds of demons, right? Is that what the Gemara is talking about? Or maybe the Gemara is talking about something a little different, that there are other things at play here. Maybe. We know there are spirits that have forces like... There are different types of spirits, the Talmud tells us. There are those that take on form like human beings, and then there are those that are like angels. That's the Rashi I wanted to bring you, which I'm not finding right now. In the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin, Rashi discusses the difference between a shade and a ruach, and which one's like this and which one's like that. But I'm not finding it right now. I'm not finding it right now. Meaning there's a Rashi in Sanhedrin Kuf Aleph, and there's a Rashi in Sanhedrin Tzadi Tes, but the exact Rashi that I want, I'm not finding right now. At any rate, coming back to this, so we have to know that there are multiple understandings. The concepts do show up in Halacha, and we also have the idea that they don't have the capacity to inflict any harm here in the land of Israel. Ah, you asked the question, the spirit of Navos that appears, that we're told appears before the court of God. So there it's a special thing where the Gemara discusses the idea over there. We have to really learn the Gemara, but the idea over there is that spirit over there is not like spirit in any of these other conversations we're having. Ruach could mean many things. I understand. So you have to ask them. But the spirit of Novos, so Chazal tell us, yes, it was his deceased spirit that came before God and made a claim and in some way was able to affect the prophecy of the prophets. But she had that spirit had God's approval. So God caused them to have a false prophecy. But that needs a lot of work to understand that Gemara. How does that work, that God gave prophets false prophecy? So you have to learn the Gemara, but it's not the spirit in the same sense. Meaning, we're not talking on the same plane here. You with me?
It's a different kind of spirit. It's not like the kind that just pops up and falls to you and says, "Hey, one more green mountain here." Please.
No. No. I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. Not the way I understood the Gemara.
Because it's both a thing, I mean, I don't know, this idea of possession seems like a particular kind of deal.
Oh, so that's another thing. That's a totally different thing.
I would assume that it was just an allegorical type term for someone like flipping out, you know, kind of losing his wits temporarily.
No, the Medrash gives us...
Guys jumping in like my body sometimes?
No. Stopped happening about a millennium or two ago. The Medrash quotes us that the rabbis had to send an emissary to the Roman emperor, and the rabbis said, if you're going, take along, I think, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai with you. And Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai only agreed to go with someone else. I don't have the text in front of me right now, but it's online. We quoted this story years ago. We learned the text. And as they were sailing on the ship, suddenly they saw a spirit up on top on the mast of the ship. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai got on his feet and said, "What are you doing here?" So he said, "I came to help you guys. What do you mean?" So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai started crying. He said, "Look, my great-great-grandfather's maid got an angel, and I only get a spirit. You know, Hagar, when she's out, she gets an angel shows up, right? The angel shows up to the desert to talk to Hagar. And I'm on my way to the Roman emperor. I only get a spirit." The spirit said, "Don't worry, but I'll help you. So, but you'll know I'm there. I'll be there, and I'll go into the emperor." And what he did was he went and took hold of the emperor's daughter's body, and then Rav Shimon bar Yochai came, and he told him get out, and then he got out, and then everything, and then the emperor owed them one because they saved his daughter, and then when he went out, I think all the glass dishes in the house all burst and whatever. Okay, so it happened once in Jewish history, it happened twice in Jewish history. I don't think it's happening like this millennium. I know that there are all kinds of people who try to make money by selling you all kinds of stories and videos of stories that they claim happened. It's already been proven pretty clearly that it was all a hoax, and I don't think this has happened or is going to happen this millennium. I wouldn't worry about it.
In the book on the book, it actually had an interesting thing pertaining to the lock about, I forget the exact term, but if a guy gets this weird whimsical thing, I forget what it is, and he demands, they're writing up these divorce papers, and then it leaves him, you're supposed to say, actually it says, if you drink, I thought it was just like a euphemistic way of saying getting drunk, instead of it's a spirit that resides in wine, right? He drinks it, he demands a divorce, but then, he comes to his senses and then you can nullify it. But if he does it before he drinks the wine, and then he gets the spirit, and then he says, no, I changed my mind, you keep it. So this seems like something that actually would have practical real world implications.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. I really wouldn't worry about it. I wouldn't worry about it. But at the end of the day, the concept does show up in the Talmud. The Talmud mentions it in passing, and Rashi explains in Erechin that this is the story the Talmud is referring to. We have a Medrash that refers to the story of the Dibuk, but to say that this is happening nowadays, I wouldn't worry about it. If you want to worry about it, then the only practical application is that we have on tradition that the Dibuk cannot enter a person who made a blessing on his wine before he drank it. So just be extra careful to make blessings before you drink. Right, so we had a guy doing that here, and we had a guy who was giving psychological assistance, and also doing all kinds of things like that. And I told the guys that I wonder whether his actions are avodah zarah, and I wouldn't go near him. You know, you got to be very careful with these things. You're playing with borderline avodah zarah. If you know exactly what you're doing, then okay, then first show me you know everything else in Talmud, then I'm willing to hear that you know about things like this, like the laws of Avodah Zarah. When do you cross the line and it becomes Avodah Zarah and when not? And that's why I'm saying I would not worry about this. I think that this is an area that's been magnified like any other area that sounds spooky. People are very interested in it and have always been, like the Rambam writes, every generation, you see the Torah and throughout Devarim keeps warning us, don't be superstitious, stop thinking about demons, don't think about, the Torah gives us warnings almost in every parsha. Throughout the book of Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu warns the Jewish people not to be superstitious, not to worry about demons, not to deal with all of this. Why does Moshe have to tell us that? Because the nature of the people is that once they enter the land of Israel and they hear these stories from South America, or in those days they heard it that was happening in Canaanite territory or this or that, and then they have a kid who's having psychological problems, they say, why don't I take him out to the witch doctor in the Mori neighborhood, maybe he'll cure him. Tells us the Torah, no, this is not the way to go. You want real medication? Okay, real medication. You want to go to exorcists or whatever witch doctors there are, you have to be very careful. Many times you're dealing with avodah zarah. And you'll notice that the Torah warned us already in last week's parsha, in this week's parsha, in 2 weeks from now parsha. The Torah is going to say it again and again. Stick with Hashem. Don't go looking for all these different unnatural... I don't even want to say spiritual. People call them spiritual. They're not spiritual. They're fakes. You know, that's not what the world's all about. Yes, but if you could introduce yourself.
I'm a neighbor.
Ah, Baruch Haba. What's your name?
I'm visiting my children up here, Mid Aliyah, Jaffreki. I've been here in the morning. You know, all the different times in the morning, enjoyed your lectures and my. Well, the rabbi has actually taught my kids at Sam and Rabbi Sperling. What's his name?
Rabbi Sperling, yeah.
Sperling. They taught my. He was to become a rabbi, but he didn't actually come because he got a job. He was out of a job, so he thought he'd do rabbinics, but he gave up. But he loved learning with. And so my daughter, she went to different Sam's. She's married a doctor now. She's married a doctor. She's obviously. About time now, but great admiration for your teachers here, Rabbi did. What was the purpose? You say that is it a story, not a story about the Solomon and the Ashmadai? Is it the demon?
Mm-hmm.
What is that that's just a parable, isn't it? I mean, or is it? I mean, if that, why would they bring the demon? You know, I mean,
why would why?
If you're saying you're not supposed to believe in demons, and yet the rabbis bring the story about a demon, and it's quite. Is it a serious story or not? It's just a message.
I think that would depend if you're Rambam or you're the other commentaries, you know.
I don't know.
I'm saying so, you know, the simple understanding is there is a king of demons, his name is Ashmedai, and Shlomo captured him, and then he did Shlomo one over, and he kicked Shlomo out of his kingdom and took over the kingdom. That's going to be the question between the commentaries. Do we take the story literally or do we not? You know, that's... I don't know if we'd say a parable or something else.
I don't know how
the Rambam would explain that story. Who am I to rule on a question that the Gohanim, you have two opinions? I say, okay, you have two opinions on how to understand all these things. In general, there are two schools of understanding.
But in other words, you can't laugh at it. You can't sort of...
If the Talmud says it, then the Talmud's a serious book. The Talmud's not making jokes. What the Talmud meant by it, did the Talmud mean it literally or did the Talmud mean it figuratively? Well, the Talmud seems to take it literally. The Talmud, the simple reading, just like the simple reading of the story of King Saul, is that this is literally what's going on here. The simple reading of the Torah is that this is what's going on here. That would seem to be the more simple reading, but that's not necessarily the more correct reading of what's going on there.
But you said to take some bits from the story of King Saul not as literal. So, for example, that he only ruled for 2.5 years, but then you said, I asked him, well, they had all these kids and did all these wars. You wouldn't have had time, so you said, well, you don't take it literally. Or we don't take it literally.
That's,
you think about it,
there are instances where...
Wars,
right, there are...
All the other wars and had all those kids in 2.5 years.
There are instances where we say that verses, there is no other option. The verse obviously cannot be understood literally. There are situations like that. But there are situations where you can go either way, right? That's an example of a situation where you can't, you know. It's just like if you want to say that the Jews were in Egypt for 400 years and you do the math, it's impossible to say they were there for 400 years.
So why does Rav Cohen say that Orthodox Jewish people
You have to ask him what he says.
So do you not? Okay, then it's the natural following. Do you believe literally or not?
I think that some things have literal understanding, and other things cannot be understood literally. There are areas where you can't understand it literally; it just doesn't work. I never heard that you should be scared of saying Lilith.
Really?
I never heard of that.
I
don't know. Okay, so then ask with someone who told you that. Don't ask me. I never heard of it. That's all.
Yeah, but it's